Hi, I'm Brooke.
And I'm Tom, and this is our next edition of Film Frenzy Friday. And on a side note, we are doing this podcast from two different locations this week. Brooke is back up at school, and I'm still at home. So we're going to welcome Brooke to my studio and say hi from a distance.
It's really strange because one of the big problems with doing this in the same room is picking up each other's echo, and I'm watching the recording line now and it's not doing that, so I keep feeling like something's wrong.
So we're doing this through FaceTime so we can see each other and talk to each other and still get our recording in.
It's gonna be interesting to say the least.
I hope it's at least fun. I think it will be.
Yeah, we'll see.
So let's go ahead and get into the movie. Why don't you tell us what we watched?
Okay, so this week we watched Memento from 2002, directed by Christopher Nolan, with a runtime of about 2 hours, give or take a couple minutes. This movy is starring Guy Pearce, and a couple of other people that I personally don't recognize that much. I mean, even with the Amazon spotlight, you know.
Right, you have Joe Pantoliano. I don't know how to say his last name, but he's Ralphie from The Sopranos.
Right.
And then you had Bert, or I'm sorry, Mark Boone Jr., who plays Bert, and that's Bobby from Sons of Anarchy.
Right.
And then you had Carrie Ann Moss, who was Trinity in the Matrix movies.
Oh, that's why she looks familiar. Got it.
Yes. So I had to look those up, but those are well-known actors that I know.
Right.
But what year did you say this was from again?
2000.
Oh, okay, so it's a fairly older movie,
Right.
but it's a good one. I enjoy this one every time I watch it, but this time was a little different. Trying to take notes on this movie was tough because if anybody has not seen this movie, be prepared, it's going to be spoiled for you. But I do suggest you watch it. This movie is filmed backwards, and not legitimately backwards, but each scene takes place, and then the following scene ends where that previous scene began. So it's kind of confusing. I did notice this time watching that early in the film, it was harder to follow than later. Later it got a little bit easier. Maybe it's because of watching it, or they just made it, I don't know, more seamless or something.
Yeah, I see this movie's so interesting because of the way that it's shot backwards. And now that I'm back at school, obviously I am watching these movies with my roommates. So I watched it with Nate and Trevor, and they had never seen it before. And I think that they kind of felt the opposite. They had a harder time understand what was going on toward the end of the movie, which was interesting. I think that it's hard to put the pieces together backwards in some instances, so I can understand why they felt that way, you know?
Right. So when it got over, did it all come together for them? They understood?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because I felt that way also the first time watching it. You didn't really know where it was going. You didn't know, understand what it really was.
Right. Definitely. It's just, yeah, the whole backwards thing. I mean, obviously we've seen a lot of non-linear movies that exist. I mean, you have things like Pulp Fiction.
Right, where, yeah, the beginning's the end's the middle, and
Yeah.
yeah. Even as many times I've seen that, I can't put it in order. I don't even know if it would make sense, but yeah. Because at one point John Travolta dies and then he's alive again. So I don't quite
Yeah.
understand
Yeah,
the
exactly.
timeline. But it's still a good movie.
Right.
Definitely one to go and watch if you haven't seen that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that this movie is different in terms of something like that because at the end of the last episode I described it as non-linear, but it's not really non-linear. It's just backwards. I mean, you have the whole like side subplot which is non-linear in comparison to the main plot, but
Right. Well, one thing I picked up this time was the scene that's in black and white, that where he's telling the story of Sammy Jenkins.
Right.
That is actually going forward,
Right.
and that, as it gets towards the end, leads up to the beginning of the movie.
Right.
I never really picked up on that before because there was so much going on that it was harder to follow all of it. But knowing what happens and seeing it again. That black and white scene made a little bit more sense. I will say that it was hard watching it on Amazon Prime because it had ads.
Yeah.
So if you can watch it without ads, it's that much better because it would cut to a 90-second commercial, and then I would almost forget what scene we were on.
Right.
So it's kind of a bad movie to have commercials in.
Yeah, I thought it was strange that they did it like that. I mean, specifically had a movie ads on a movie like that as opposed to like a made-for-TV movie. But yeah, I don't... That's weird.
Yeah, I guess they got to get their money in where they can.
Yeah, whatever.
So, basically this movie takes place in, I guess it's more of a modern time. It's not like a past or future or anything weird like that. But Guy Pearce is Leonard, who doesn't like to be called Lenny.
Right.
Because his wife called him Lenny.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things there. And Joe Pantoliano, who plays Teddy, a.k.a. John G.
Right.
I thought in the beginning, when he was holding that Polaroid picture, right in the very beginning mm-hmm. of the movie, it was going in reverse, which I thought was neat. You know, it's got a developed picture, and as the scene's going, it's undeveloping.
Right.
Which kind of gives you that little bit of foreshadow right there that this movie's backwards.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was something that Christopher Nolan did that was really interesting. And I was thinking about this movie, and I was trying to figure out if it was meant to be backwards. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, obviously this movie fits together forward, but like putting it backwards, was that their original intention, or did they decide to do that later to kind of give you an aha? I mean, it could work either way, you know?
Right. And after watching, I was actually wondering, do you think that somebody could edit this movie and put it in forward,
yes.
like put it in the chronological, and it would, but would it be as good a movie? I think it would be, but there's a lot of those twists where things are happening and then you figure out why it happened and it gives you that oh shit moment.
Right.
So like, you wouldn't get that same feeling if you watched it, you know, chronologically.
Yeah. I mean, because I think him deciding to write the license plate is such a big moment in terms of him, like, basically fucking Teddy over. So I don't, that probably wouldn't punch the same. So, I mean, I don't know if it would be as good backwards.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see it, like, if somebody had it out there. I almost thought about looking for it and see if it was out there, just to see what it would be like.
Yeah, it probably exists. It probably exists.
Yeah. So the beginning obviously is the end. And when this movie starts and he shoots Teddy.
Right.
And you know, it's like, okay, he just killed somebody. You're thinking, okay, it doesn't really make sense. But as that scene goes forward, I don't even remember the first cut that it backtracks. But it didn't seem very seamless. I did pick up on that. Like, at the beginning, you can't understand, like, what's going on. If you don't know the movie, I think it's hard to figure out what's going on.
Right. And I'm trying to remember. And I think that the first time it cuts back is to when he... Wait, oh, it cuts to the first scene. That first actual scene is when he wakes up in the motel, and he goes through the who am I, what am I looking for, you know, and he kind of starts to piece together like what's going on, because then he goes out to the front desk of this motel and talks to the guy from Sons of Anarchy, Bert,
and Bert, yep.
Yeah, and he says you know, oh, I have this memory condition, and then you finally, you know, this is the world that we're in right now. And then we move on to, oh, Teddy and hold my calls and, you know, all this stuff that right. becomes more important later.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to kind of be how we have to talk about this. It's going to be scenes and not actual scenes. It's going to have to be the whole scene that we talk
right.
about. Because it's so hard to analyze the scene that, and then it goes backwards.
Right.
So the gist of it, the beginning of the movie, shoots Teddy. We don't know why. And then it goes to when he's at the hotel.
Right.
And he meets, or the motel, and he meets Bert, and he's trying to explain to him, oh, you know, I have this condition. And he's like, yeah, I know. You told me yesterday. Oh, I did. So that's basically what his life is. He forgets, and I'm guessing, I don't know if they specifically say it, but it's like 15 minutes. And I only think that because when he's telling the Sammy Jenkins story, his wife keeps putting her watch back 15 minutes to when he's basically losing his memory. So I'm assuming it's 15 minutes. That sounds about right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
So basically, Leonard takes pictures, he writes notes, and he tattoos himself as all these reminders of him trying to find the guy who killed his wife. That's the gist of this movie. Let's just get to the gist of the movie. So he's trying to find his wife. This guy's name is John G. That's all he knows. His name is John G. Killed his wife. He's trying to find the killer. Apparently, she was murdered in their bathroom. And they just kind of keep showing the little scenes of her wrapped up in, which I guess is the shower curtain. And he likes to, at some points, tattoo himself. And you see that in the movie. He's tattooing himself with a needle that he puts into a ballpoint pen and is actually tattooing himself with ink from the pen,
Which
which
is
I don't really know if you should be doing, but I know people have done that. But he also gets tattoos from tattoo parlors. Now, there is a part that I almost found it to be like a foreshadow, and I don't know if you picked up on this. The first time he takes his shirt off, he's got the tattoos across his chest. Some of them are forwards and some of them are backwards. So obviously the backwards ones are so he can read them in the movie or in the mirror. But it kind of has a little bit of foreshadow of, hey, everything's backwards in this movie. Kind of something I picked up on. I don't know if that's intentional or if it's just coincidental.
No, it's probably intentional. With the way that this movie seems to be made, it definitely was intentional. I don't think that anything that they did in this movie was unintentional.
And well, there was something that even Bert says when he's talking to him for the first time. He says something about his memories backwards. I remember he used that term specifically because he's trying to explain to him how he remembers, and he goes, "Oh yeah, like backwards." So that was another backwards. I don't know if there's like a triple kind of thing in there, the tattoos, him mentioning that, and the movie's backwards. I don't know if that has anything to do with anything.
I mean, it definitely could. There's a lot of foreshadowing and a lot of backwards foreshadowing specifically, but I did pick up on that line that Birch said. But I didn't write it down, so I don't know the exact line. But I did write that they plant a lot of backwards foreshadowing in the beginning of this movie, specifically like the first 10 minutes. You've got the Polaroid, the backwards line from Bert. So, I mean, definitely they knew what they were doing. They definitely knew what they were doing.
And I think the first scene is actually in reverse in slow motion because I think when the guy's laying on the ground, I think Leonard's kind of moving backwards up the steps or something like that. It's being filmed like actually in reverse. I'm pretty sure the beginning, there's something's going on in reverse. I think when the Polaroid scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I know that the Polaroid develops backwards, but I don't remember after that.
I'm pretty sure. You have to go back and check that out. There's another foreshadow where he talks about how he has to recognize his own handwriting. So he's telling about how he takes notes, and he goes, "It's really important to know your handwriting." And there's a couple different times in the movie where that comes into play. At one point, Bert takes him into his hotel room, and he says, "Oh, this is oh, you lost your key. It's probably in the room." He takes him in there, and then he says, "Oh, wait, no, this isn't your room." And he's like, "Oh, it's not my room, huh?" And there's a paper bag on the bed, and it says something on it.
It
I think
says
that is
shave or
a
shaving.
shave left thigh or something like that. And he goes, "Why is this my handwriting?" And he starts laughing, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, I rented you another room." Which I thought was kind of funny because it was kind of a funny part of the movie. And it's like, wait a minute, how many rooms? do I have? And he goes, well, just two so far. So basically, he's taking advantage of him having a bad memory by saying, hey, yeah, you need a new room. Hey, you need to rent a room. You need to rent a room. So he's going to keep, you know, tagging him along. I found that to be pretty funny.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a foreshadow with the recognize your handwriting. Mm-hmm. And then even later, there was a part where Teddy's trying to tell him, hey, write this down. And it was about Natalie.
Right.
And throughout the most of the movie, the picture that he has of her, there's something scratched out.
Mm-hmm.
And as the movie progresses, things start erasing themselves. So at one point, there's nothing written on it. And he's like, write that down. So he doesn't really want to write it down. So he's like, fine. And it's something like, I think she can't be trusted. Something like that.
Right.
So he writes it real sloppy. Now, as you're watching the movie, you know what his handwriting looks like.
Right.
So he writes it real shitty. And you're like, he did that on purpose because he wants to be able to know that I didn't want to write that or that's not real.
Right.
So he ends up scratching it out anyway. So that's where he was saying it was important to know your own handwriting.
Yeah. And I mean, going off of specifically Natalie, she is a fucking manipulative bitch.
Yep. And you don't really see that until... But it's funny because of his situation.
Right.
She was like that in the beginning, and she didn't seem that way towards the end because she was trying to play the nice card.
Oh, yeah.
But when it gets to the end of the movie, which is the beginning, you can see how shitty of a person she is. Like, yeah. Terrible.
Yeah. When they get into that fight, and she starts calling his wife a whore, and then she leaves and comes back, and, you know, he's looking for the pen. And she took all the pens.
Yeah, so that's the scene I was talking about. That if you didn't see that, the way they did it, it wouldn't have the same effect.
Yeah.
Because she's in the house, and she just kind of walks in, and nothing's going on, and she's grabbing all these pens. And you're like, what the hell is she grabbing all the pens for? And then that's when she starts arguing with him. And then, you know, he smacks her in the face. And that's when she finally gets the fat lip that she's had the whole movie that you don't know where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And she leaves, and he's like, oh, gotta write it down. He's frantically looking for a pen, and she's sitting out the car just staring at him. And then, boom, that time limit's up, and he forgets, and she comes walking in, and he goes, oh, what happened to your face? Oh, Dodd beat the shit out of me, you know?
Right.
What the hell? that was like that what the hell moment. Like, I can't believe that she would do that. But that... Even though it was shitty of her to do that, that was great for this type of movie.
Oh,
like, the way that they did that, that just worked so well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. She is such an interesting character in terms of that. Like, she very much, it's like she uses everyone she can to get to the top, almost. And I think Teddy even says that to him in the car, you know, she only helps you because, you know, it'll do something for her. Right. Or whatever he says. And that, I mean, that's foreshadowing in and of itself because that scene happens, I don't know, even know, 10 minutes later.
Right. So, yeah, we're progressing pretty quickly with this one, but I don't think we're in order. But that's fine. But even when she meets him at the diner...
Right.
You can see that she's kind of off, but she's already has a fat lip there. So all that stuff has already taken place.
Yep.
So what was she doing there? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like she was, I don't really know what her angle was. I don't really know after everything that had taken place in the beginning, which was the end,
right.
Like as you lead up to it, I don't know what her angle really was with messing with him. I guess it was to kill the drug dealer. That guy Dodd.
I think that it had something to do with Jimmy G, the original Jimmy G from the end, her boyfriend. I think that it had something to do with she realized that, you know, Leonard had killed Jimmy and wanted revenge. So she knew that she probably already wanted Dodd dead for whatever reason, but she probably knew that if she could get him to kill Dodd, it would basically put a target on his back and then, you know, wipe out basically two birds with one stone. That is my thinking on what she was doing, but I don't know if that's correct.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But I don't know who wanted Jimmy dead in the first place.
Right.
They don't really say, they don't really explain that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just that he's just a scumbag, and, I mean, Teddy's a cop, so he just, it almost seems like Teddy has people, or Teddy pins, you know, this murder, quote unquote, on people, so that people who, like, fall through the system, almost, if that makes sense.
Like,
kind of like a Dexter situation.
Like he's a vigilante?
Yeah. I think that's what, he, like, takes advantage of Leonard's, you know, memory problem. So he has him, you know, basically take out these guys that he can't, you know, either get evidence on to arrest, or he thinks are scumbags, or whatever. I think it's a vigilante justice kind of thing.
I mean, I guess I can see it that way, but that's not the way I interpreted it. I don't really know how I interpret it, but when you get to the end, you realize that Leonard can be manipulated, and he manipulates himself.
Yeah.
And that's one of the most, I don't want to say disturbing, but surprising things.
Right.
Because this whole movie, you think that it's one thing, and then you get to the beginning, which is the end, and you realize it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get more into that as we get closer, but it's very hard to interpret exactly every angle to the movie. It's there's a lot of opinion in this one of how you see things.
Right. And I think that the problem with this movie being backwards is that we don't really understand anyone's motive. I think that there's always going to be speculation about motive because it's backwards. So we don't really get the same introduction to these characters that we would have if it were, you know, backwards forward.
Right. There's the character development happens towards the end of the movie,
right,
rather than the beginning.
Yeah.
So you're learning them more. You know more about them in the beginning than you do the end.
Right.
Which is the beginning is the end, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like all the stuff that happens in the beginning is stuff you should have known in the beginning, but you didn't know till the end.
Right. Exactly.
And Teddy even says something in there about Lenny being set up to kill the wrong guy.
Right.
So I don't know if he realizes that he's the guy that's not being set up, but he's the one that he's going to kill. I don't know if he realizes that or if it's already happened in the past. Because I have a feeling that he's killed a lot of John G's.
Oh, yeah. I think that is implied.
It's like an ongoing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you could almost assume that there's a prequel to this.
Right.
You know, there could be a lot of prequels to this. You don't know how long his wife's been dead.
Right.
You don't know how long before he started killing people that, you know, his wife's been dead.
Right. Right.
There's just so much.
Yeah. And I think that is a big part of this movie too, is you don't really know when or where it takes place. You just know that it's happening.
Right. So, you know, we'll talk about the black and white scene for a minute. So he's telling a story through this black and white. It's like a cut scene.
Yeah.
It's going in order,
mm-hmm.
starting from the beginning. So he's talking on the phone and they never really say who he's talking to.
Right.
Teddy makes the assumption that he's talking to some cop because mm-hmm. he even says, oh, you know, he's fucking with you. He's put notes under your door. He's trying to get, you know, he's mm-hmm. trying to get you to talk on the phone. And then during that whole thing, Lenny finds the tattoo under his arm, under the bandage that says, don't answer the phone. As he's on the phone, he was like, oh, who is this? And he starts this panic. He's like, oh shit, I'm not supposed to be talking on the phone, but I have no idea why, because all I have is this tattoo that says, don't answer the phone. And then that leads into, you know, hold all my calls when he's talking to Bert.
Right.
But yeah, they never really say 100% who's on the phone.
I think that it's Teddy.
And that's what your mom said when we were watching. I don't know. I mean, it could be, and maybe he was just playing the hey, someone's talking to you, but I don't almost think that he would recognize him, but he doesn't really know who he is.
Right. Well, he describe at the end, he like describes himself, and then he goes out into the lobby, and Teddy's there. So I think that it was Teddy. I think that that's a
Right.
pretty solid
It's a
assumption.
good, it's, yeah, I mean, it's not like they're leaving it up into interpretation. Oh, it could be this guy or this guy. There's nobody else in the movie that it could possibly be. So,
Right.
the Sammy Jenkins thing, his wife has diabetes,
Right.
and they say in there that he's able to give insulin because he remembered how to do it from before his accident. And they never say what Sammy's accident was.
Right.
They just say that he had this condition, he's forgetful, and they're investigating him. So I'm wondering, was Leonard ever really this insurance investigator? Or is that just a story? Because in the end, the story of Sammy is him. So was that a real story? Was Sammy really him in the story? I mean, they never really explain that.
Right. Well, and that I think, looking at my second page, I think that that's where it starts to get confusing because it starts to show you that Leonard is an unreliable narrator, which I mean, obviously he has a memory condition, he's unreliable. But the way that it's implied from Teddy's perspective is that he, morphs the story of himself and the story of Sammy Jenkins together to form this, cohesive story of Sammy Jenkins, which we don't even really know if that's true because you're not supposed to trust Teddy's lies. But so it kind of leads you in this really confusing like situation where you're not really sure who to believe, and you want to believe Leonard because he's the main character, he's who you've been following this whole time. Why would he lie to you? But then, when you see how easily manipulated he is, it kind of makes it so that you also want to believe Teddy. So you're kind of stuck in this, what's the truth? Is his wife dead? Is she alive? And what is the situation with, Sammy Jenkins really like? Was he really a con man? What did he really have this memory condition? So, I mean, it's definitely like kind of a think piece.
Yeah, I would say the whole thing. But he's also telling the story, so you don't know what the real story is. Because when they were talking about the part where he's there, they have him pick up the pieces, those shapes, and one of them or two of them are electrified,
Right.
and he keeps picking up the electrified ones, and he gets pissed off at the guy, flips him off, and calls him a quack or whatever.
Yeah.
It almost feels like if he was a con man, I mean, he's really good at it because he keeps putting himself through that,
Right.
which I don't find to be impossible, but it's also him telling the story, so you really don't know what the real story is.
Yeah, and I think that it's the Sammy story is interesting in terms of the situation with his wife, specifically with her final moments and the insulin over and over and over again, which kind of leads you to believe that maybe this, situation he's talking about isn't, this guy's not faking. Like, who is, that crazy to continue on with a lie when it gets to that point, But I mean, he could also be deranged. Who knows, not us.
Right.
But I want to talk about black and white and the use of black and white in specifically those flashback scenes. And I think it's obviously so that we can tell apart the time differences. That's a given. But I think that it has a little bit of a deeper meaning. So hang on tight while I overanalyze for a second. I think that because Leonard is an insurance claims investigator, the way that his job works is he's forced to see these situations, he's forced to investigate these situations, and the answer has to be black and white. There isn't a shade of gray in between. It's a black and white situation. He
Okay,
has,
I like where you're going with that.
yeah, he has to decide if this situation is or is not covered by the insurance company. It can't be half covered. I mean, it could be, but they don't want him to cover it. They want him to have a definitive, either it's this or it's this. There's not really an in-between. And them deciding not to cover him because of the mental health issue, that also, it makes it a black and white situation. They ruled it's a mental health. That doesn't fall under your insurance. You don't get anything.
Huh. I like that. I never would have thought of it that way, but that makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
I like it. Still talking about the black and white scene, there's another foreshadow. I don't know if you picked it up because it happens real quick. So when, after Sammy basically overdoses his wife, right, and he ends up in the mental hospital, he's sitting in a chair and he's like looking around, and they say how sad it is because he doesn't even realize his wife's dead, which is kind of heartbreaking.
Oh.
It's just kind of, he's just sitting there in that chair, just like, almost like, you know, where's my wife at? Where's my wife? But as the camera's panning across, Sammy turns into Leonard for like a split second.
Oh my gosh, I didn't see before that.
Before the scene changes. It like happened so quick. I was like, oh man, I saw Leonard in there. So, and that's before you even know the twist. And if you don't pick up on it, you'll miss it.
That's crazy. That also has a little bit of, you know, foreshadowing also with the, he doesn't know if his wife is alive or dead. Because Leonard doesn't know at this point if his wife's alive or dead.
Right, so it's almost like a sixth sense kind of thing. Like, they're blatantly telling you. How come you don't see it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, this movie is really crazy on the rewatch. Just to, because I think it's one of those movies you have to watch multiple times. Because you're never going to see everything the first time.
Oh, absolutely. This one even more than some other movies that I've seen numerous times. Like I said, I've only seen this probably, this might be my only, the third time I've seen it, something gotcha. Like that.
Yeah, I think this is only the second time I've seen it.
I think the first time that you saw it was the second time I saw it.
Good. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
So, at this point in the movie-ish, Dodd gets introduced.
Right.
And it's more of a, who the hell is Dodd? And he's just got a picture of this dude beat up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as the scene goes through, you know, he ends up in his hotel room, and he doesn't know where he's at. And he's got the alcohol in his hand, the bottle in his hand. He's like, well, I'm not drunk, so I don't know what's going on. And he ends up taking a shower. And while he's in the shower, somebody comes in the bathroom. And he was like, what? He thinks he's in his own hotel room.
Right.
And this guy is in there. He starts fighting with him and basically ties him up.
Right.
And puts him in the closet and doesn't know who he is. But he calls Teddy and says, you know, you need to meet me. But he doesn't know who Teddy is. He just knows his picture and there's a phone number on it.
Right.
So he's like, oh, this has got to be somebody I know. Let me just call him. Because that's what his life is, of, you know, photographs and notes.
Right.
But I thought there was another funny scene where he comes to and he's running through that parking lot. And he goes, oh, whoa, what am I doing? And he goes, oh, I'm chasing that guy. So he starts chasing him and he starts shooting at him. He's like, oh, no, I'm not. He's chasing me.
Yeah.
I thought that was like one of those comic relief kind of scenes. It was funny.
Yeah, that was funny.
So right after that, you realize that this guy, Jimmy, is missing.
Right.
And that's Natalie.
Yeah, Natalie.
Natalie's boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's in the bar, when he first meets her, the first scene, it shows him drinking out of a mug that has beer in it, and he's getting ready to drink at him. She goes, oh, nope, you don't want that. I'll take it. So she takes the cup away, and you don't have any idea why. But then when they show the beginning of that scene, and he's talking to her, she doesn't know who he is, and I guess he's giving off this weird vibe that she doesn't like him. So she pours a beer, and she's passing it around. She gives it to the guy at the end of the bar. He spits in it. He gives it to him. He goes, hey, you know, you need to spit in this. And he's like, okay. So he spits in it, and then she spits a lot into it. And then later, realizing that that's the beer that they had given him, it's like, man, you are fucking twisted, lady.
Yeah, she's definitely crazy.
But they never really explain why she doesn't like him right off the bat. I don't know what the situation is.
I just think that it's, she knows because he's in Jimmy's clothes and driving his car.
Right.
This is, you probably killed Jimmy, or you did something, or you turned him in, you know. I mean, the clothes, right, I think, are pretty damning.
Yeah, but I don't know. Did she want Jimmy dead? I'm guessing not, because she was surprised when she looked in the car and she'd go, hey, Jimmy, and it's not him.
Right.
So she was confused at that point. So She knows who Teddy is, though, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure how they know each other. I think it's just kind of a word-of-mouth thing. Like, they just know about each other.
Well, I'm thinking this whole thing that I think that Teddy is the one who set up Jimmy
yes.
to get killed.
Yes.
And I think that Natalie knows that. And then she puts the pieces together. It's like, oh, shit, he's got his clothes. He's the guy that killed him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know leading further, you know, forward in the story, you know, backwards in the movie, but forwards in the story, why she was trying to get him to do what he was going to do. Maybe she had another John G in mind of him to kill, and she was trying to get him on her side. I don't really know. I know she wanted him to kill Dodd, though.
I think that the John G she had in mind was Teddy, because why else would she give him Teddy's DMV information? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because, like I said, she only does things to, like, get ahead, basically.
Well, and he even says that. She's only going to do things that she, you know, for you, that she, you know, that can help her.
Yeah, basically.
So, the whole Dodd situation, I don't know, it's kind of, it's almost irrelevant in a way.
Right.
Like, I don't really feel like it's even necessary, but I think it just shows the next part of the story.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's, I don't know. That's just, she obviously wanted him dead. That's where that ends.
Right. I think Dodd is just a character to kind of throw you a curveball so you'll feel some sort of sympathy towards Natalie. I genuinely think that's his only purpose.
Right.
Is to make you believe Natalie.
Mm-hmm. There was another funny part that I picked up on. When he's chasing Dodd and Dodd gets away from him and he runs into his hotel room, but he doesn't know which room he went into. So he puts the card in the door to loosen the thing, and he kicks it, you know, he waits for somebody to walk by the peephole. He kicks the door and he opens it up and there's some dude laying on the ground and it's not him. And he was like, he looks at the door and he had room 6 written on his sheet. That was room 9 because he had his the paper upside down.
Right, yeah.
So he just says to him, oh, sorry, and he closes the door.
Yeah. Like,
that was, you know, another little comic area. It was pretty funny. And he just, you know, sorry. And then I don't understand why he was burning his wife's things. Because we're to that part where they're starting to tell the story about how you're getting more of the story of his wife's situation and how she died. And so he's got the items. He's got it's like her bra, a clock, a book,
right,
and the brush. So he's burning all that stuff. So it's almost like he's trying to forget now.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing he can remember. So I don't know. He's really not going to be able to forget because that's basically his last memory. But they never say why he's burning her stuff.
Yeah, I think that it probably means something symbolically. Because, like, going backwards from here is when we kind of start to see his, like, relationship with Natalie, like, starting to progress. And it kind of, it no longer, I think at this point, becomes about his wife. It's just that he wants revenge. That's his whole thing, is he wants to have revenge. So I think that that is supposed to, like, symbolize the moment of no return, basically, where it's not about my wife anymore. You took something from me, and now I'm going to take it from you, kind of thing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I would say so.
But, I mean, I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, I just found it weird that they never really explained it. It's one of those interpret for yourselves.
Yeah.
But moving forward in the story, which is moving backwards, so he's in the hotel room with the prostitute.
Right.
And he's explaining to her, you know, all I want you to do is place these things around the room. And she tries to use the hairbrush. He's like, oh, no, don't use the hairbrush. Just lay the stuff around like you would if, like, they were yours.
Right.
And then she's like, okay. And he says, and then, you know, once I fall asleep, just go into the bathroom and slam the door. She's like, slam the door. He goes, yeah, just enough for me to wake up. So that's basically, I almost interpret that as him trying to jumpstart his memory. Or yeah. He wants to have, that's how I interpret it, just that. he's trying to jumpstart his memory. Because I wouldn't say he's trying to relive it, because why would you want to relive that?
Right.
It's he's trying, I think, to fix himself. He's like, this is my last memory. This is how it happened. Let's start over. I want to start from there and see if I can fix my brain.
Right.
So basically, they never even say what his injury is, but you see it later at one point in the movie when the scene with his wife takes place and he goes in there and they smash him over the head with something and he's bleeding on the floor.
Right.
That's where the memory problem came from, and that's when his wife, air quotes, supposedly died, which right. in his mind, she did die. But moving forward with that, she never died in that accident. Right. She survived, but he thinks that she died because right. that's in his mind, that's what happened, because as she's laying there on the floor, he gets hit in the head. And, you know, I guess when he sees her on the floor, he automatically thinks, bam, my wife's dead. Clunk over the head. Memories are all gone.
Right.
So that's his last memories. He thinks his wife died. But in fact, she survived, and she's the one who has the diabetes.
Right.
And they actually show a scene early in the movie of him, she's sitting on the bed, and he's like pinching her thigh.
Right.
And that's actually him giving her the insulin.
Yeah.
Later in the movie, but he thinks that he's just pinching her.
Right.
In his mind, oh, I'm just giving her a pinch. But it really wasn't his story, because that's the story he was telling about Sammy.
Right.
So that's where the Sammy story kind of gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes sense in the end.
Yeah, I think so. I also think that this is very strange for a movie like this, for there to not be, quote unquote, like a love scene, a relations scene. Because I think that it's really interesting that he doesn't have sex in this movie. He just has this, like, weird thing about intimacy, which he, like, you kind of see that with the prostitute a little bit. Like, he wants to see his wife's things around, but you really see it with Natalie. Like, there's definitely an opportunity there for them to, like, be intimate with one another, and they just don't. Like, you would think that's her plan. You know what I mean?
Well, her plan, but I think that's the last thing on his mind.
Exactly. So I think that that's interesting.
Yeah, but you could assume that something happened at some point with him and Natalie.
I mean, yes, but I think that it's interesting that they don't show it. I think that I think it's interesting how he's so, you know, I mean, not that he's hung up on his wife. I mean, in his head, she just died, but I think that it's interesting the way that they play that.
Right. So we mentioned this a little bit about Sammy's wife.
Right.
And how he basically overdosed her.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to Leonard's office, him as the investigator, in the black and white scene. And she's basically a wreck. You know, I need to know what's wrong with my husband. I need to know if he's faking it. What's your opinion? So he tells her that he thinks that he's faking it. And she's so happy because she's like, okay, if he's really faking it, I need to get him to snap out of it.
Right.
So that was her plan, wasn't to have, you know, basically kill herself. It was, he wouldn't do this to me.
Right.
So she goes home and she says, oh, it's time for my insulin. And he gives her insulin. And then she sets her watch back 15 minutes. And after 15 minutes, she says, it's time for my insulin. And like clockwork, he just keeps getting up and giving her insulin. She's like in shock. She goes, there's no way that he keeps doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the third or fourth shot, she's obviously had too much and slips into a coma and dies.
Right.
And then that's when he ends up in the mental hospital, everything. But I think that's what this whole concept is that she's trying to cure him or snap him out of it. And I think that's what Leonard's whole thing with this movie is. He's trying to snap out of it.
Yeah.
Even though he's going through the motions of trying to find John G., and I almost feel like somebody's putting that into his head.
Oh, yeah.
It should be about, I need to get better, I need to get better. He needs to forget about the whole John G thing, but he can't because he keeps being told, you need to find John G. You need to find John G. So in his mind, he's never avenged his wife's killer. You know, he's never avenged that. So Teddy, if not other people, keep convincing him that he needs to kill John G. But then Teddy kind of changes tune later. And I think it's because he knows that, hey, you're a John G there, buddy.
Right. Right. And I think that it's because he says that to him. He's like, hell, I'm a John G. You know, right. John G's are never going to run out. James G, John G. It's so generic that there are so many of us, you know. And I think that's what flips the switch in his head to be like, you know what? You're right. Fuck you. You're next. Mm-hmm. You're the next John G.
So as the black and white scene is moving forward, it gets to the point where it's caught up now. And he's in like the raggedy clothes, mm-hmm. and he's walking outside. You see he's at the hotel. Right. Or that motel that I can't for the life of me think of what it is now. It's the motel he keeps taking a picture of, so he knows where he's staying.
Right.
Like the one inn or something like that.
Dreamland.
Discount Inn.
Discount Inn.
The Discount Inn. Thanks to your mom, she just told me. So the black and white scene's catching up. He's at the Discount Inn, and he's in raggedy clothes. So you know, watching it, you're like, something's different about that. So you see that it's kind of catching up.
Mm-hmm.
He jumps in an old blue pickup truck,
right,
which was the pickup truck from the beginning of the movie, which is the end of the movie. And you can see now you're starting to feel like, okay, things are progressing. You're starting to be familiar with things. You understand what's going on. And he ends up at the abandoned house.
Right.
With the truck, and there's no car or anything there. So he goes inside. And I don't remember, is he looking for something in there? Is he looking for somebody?
Teddy sets that up. Teddy sets that up for him. He like sets it up as like a drug deal thing, because it's like something about he is getting amphetamines from Jimmy, and then were giving amphetamines to Jimmy, and Jimmy has all that money in the trunk of his car that we never hear anything else about.
Yeah, he's just driving around with 200 grand in the trunk.
Yeah.
Because he knows it's there, but he obviously doesn't know it's there.
Right.
So he ends up there in the street clothes, no car there. So he goes inside, and then Jimmy comes walking in, and he's like, who the hell are you? And I think Jimmy knows who he is.
Right. Because he says something about Sammy and the memory thing.
Right. Because, when he kills him, but he's not really dead, and he's dragging him down the steps, and he says something about Sammy, and he goes like, oh, what do you know about Sammy? What did he say? Did he say Sammy? So he's like in a panic. And then Teddy shows up and he says, oh, he said something about Sammy. He says, you tell everybody that story about Sammy. Sammy Jenkins, Sammy Jenkins, Sammy Jenkins. So obviously he has a rambling problem, but he repeats himself because he doesn't know he's repeating himself.
Right.
So Jimmy's dead. And this is the beginning of the movie now, where he's in the place with Teddy. And they have their whole big discussion, and he tells him how, you know, oh, you already killed John G. He goes, no, I didn't. And he says, you know, you tell this Sammy story all the time. That's your story. You know, your wife's the one that had the diabetes. Your wife didn't die in that accident. And, you know, it's almost like he's telling him all this. He doesn't want to believe it. So that's when they have kind of their disagreement. And I think he pushes him far enough that he says, oh, okay, you know what? You're going to be my next John G.
Right.
So, you done pissed me off. So that's when he takes Jimmy's clothes and he gets into Jimmy's car and he says, you can't just take that car. And he's sitting there, he's writing down the license plate,
right,
which he had tattooed on him.
Right.
And it's Teddy's car, who is John James Gamble or whatever his name is. And then when he leaves there, the next part of the story is him going to the tattoo parlor, which already happened in the movie.
Right.
The scene before, I'm sorry, happened the scene before, but you didn't know how he got there, and that's how he got there. So all in this whole roundabout way, Teddy is a manipulator, and he's almost trying to use Leonard to get him to do things for him.
Right.
Like you said, like the whole drug deal thing.
Yeah.
And then in the same way, though, he's trying to explain to him, you know, you've already killed John G. I was there with you. And he has the picture of him. I took that picture right after you did it. You were so happy. I'm trying to get you to be happy like that again.
Right. Well, in that picture that he shows him, he's pointing to the empty spot on his chest.
Yes.
That Natalie had said earlier, you should put a tattoo there for when you did it.
And, right, when you kill John G.
Right. And then we get that flash of Leonard and his wife, his unnamed wife, and you can see he has the tattoo there on his chest that said, I killed it, or I killed the bastard, or I finally did it, or something, which is also interesting. But it, that pointing to the chest, pointing that spot on his chest, I knew immediately. I was like, oh, that's when he did it. That's when he killed him. Because he's going to put it right there.
Does he have a tattoo there?
No, he doesn't.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're saying that that's what she says you should do.
Right.
Right, okay. I thought you were saying that he had a tattoo.
No.
But yeah, in that picture he is pointing, and she did mention there's an empty spot there, you should use that.
Right.
So, that being said, maybe there was already a situation that somebody had already told him that.
Yeah.
But she doesn't know who he is, so it's not her that would have told him that back then.
It could be like a subliminal thing, you know, with
right,
him
just
and,
like a symbolism. Like, yeah. Just, they're trying to show you that that's what he should do.
But like, even like with Leonard personally, it could just be a subconscious memory that he has, you know what I mean? Yeah, it could be like subconscious. Because it kind of implies that his subconscious memory is what keeps him going anyway. So it's like he does have a memory, he just can't figure out how to jumpstart it. Which the whole wife situation makes sense, you know, in having to do with that.
And yeah, and I'm wondering if he had done that more than once, that whole having somebody lay the stuff out to give him that jumpstart.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't see why not.
So, I mean, that pretty much leads us up to the end of the movie, which, like I said, is the beginning. But I have here, you know, my interpretation was that Lenny is really the bad guy. In a way, he's just like, he's a killer, but almost doesn't know it.
Yeah.
He doesn't know he's going around just killing random John G's. But that's the reality. Whether it's him that wants to do it or somebody that's manipulating him. And I think, in my opinion, that he's just being manipulated.
With the end, I would say that it's really difficult to find, like, a right answer. I mean, because of all of these asshole characters and, like, unreliable narrators, in this, like, situation that we're in, these characters are also kind of narrators as well as Lenny, because they're feeding Lenny the information that so that he could feed it to us, basically. So I think that the end, in terms of, like, specifically, like, Lenny and Teddy, I think that Lenny is a bad guy and doesn't realize it, and then Teddy is a bad guy who knows that he can take advantage of this person who, you know, basically has, like, a shitty memory problem to his advantage. I mean, it's the same thing that Bert did, which, I mean, you could say that Bert, you know, selling him the extra room is a form of foreshadowing in terms of that. But I just think there's, you know, we really don't know, like, what the truth is at the end of this movie. And I think that's why it's so good, because it makes you think.
Well, and I think it gives you a lot of room to make up your own mind about
right.
how you interpret each character.
Gotcha.
That, I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Right. And, like, I think that this movie is a lot of assholes enabling assholes.
Yeah. I would say that, in a way, Jimmy might be the best character and the nicest character. He just doesn't get much of a story. I mean, obviously, he's
right.
got to have an asshole side to him, but you don't hear a lot about him. He doesn't play a big enough part to know
right.
who he is. I almost, at the beginning, thought that Bert was a good guy because he was just, like, being real patient with him. And then it gets to the point where, oh, yeah, I rented you another room and I got caught doing it. So it was, you know, you kind of see, like you said, everybody's taking advantage of him in their own way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a movie of manipulation and using people to, like, get ahead. I mean, I know that I said that about Natalie, but, I mean, it could really be applied to everyone. Everyone uses Leonard's condition to get ahead, basically. I mean, to put it simply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really know What else I have for this one?
Yeah.
Honestly.
This is a movie that's fun to watch, but it's difficult to analyze because it's all backwards.
And it would almost even be hard to explain it to somebody. I was talking to Rob about it. I asked him if he's seen it. He said he wasn't sure, but all I can tell him is it's filmed backwards. You really can't tell him anything that's about. I mean, you could
Right.
say that it's about somebody with amnesia, but
Right.
it would be hard to explain what the movie is because you would have to explain it backwards
Right.
to make you understand. So
Right.
it's something that if you haven't seen it, you just have to watch it. It's definitely not a disappointment. It's not a waste of time.
Yeah, I would say so.
I don't think it's a movie that I would continually watch. Like, I gotta watch it again. I gotta watch it again. I mean, I've seen it 3 times. I think I know the movie now. I mean,
Right.
I only picked up on what I did because I was trying. I was taking notes.
Right. Which I mean, sometimes movies like this don't really have that much to them. I mean, you get what you get and you don't get upset. I guess that concludes Memento.
Yeah, like I said, I think we got the gist of it all down. I think we did better this time as far as time also.
Yes, a little bit. We'll see what it comes down to in the editing room. All
All right, so what do we got up for next week?
right, next week we're doing Batman the Dark Knight, another Christopher Nolan movie, which is fun, a little bit of a different genre. It's a 2 hour and 32 minute runtime, and you can watch it on HBO Max. And that also probably means that you can watch it on Hulu with the HBO subscription. So if you want to watch along with us, then that's the best way to do it.
If you haven't seen that movie, it's you're like in a Twilight Zone or something, because that honestly is my favorite Batman movie of all time.
Oh, it's
You
so
know,
good.
I remember the first time I saw it and couldn't wait to go see it again.
Yeah, we saw this movie in theaters, you and I, the second time.
Yeah, I saw it first time with your Uncle Andy.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll dive into that one next week. On a side note, I want to say how happy we are with our Facebook page. Over the weekend, we doubled the amount of followers we had. And I almost want to give a shout out to Erin McFeeters because I believe that she was the one who started that. She started sharing our clips. She went a whole tear through and just shared away. And that is the only way that we're going to get our stuff out there, is that if you see the link, we really ask that you guys just share it. Even if you're not watching or listening in, just hit the share button so that more people can see it. We're trying to, reach out to as many people as we can.
Right. And even if, we're not doing a movie necessarily that you like or have seen before, I mean, it's always great to branch yourself out to new movies, but there's not necessarily anything saying that that's not your friend's favorite movie, and you'll never know. It's also a good, I am cleaning podcast. You're cleaning and you need something to listen to? Listen to us talk about movies.
Yeah, I've actually been listening to him, and I know it's our own, but I listen to him on the way back and forth from work. And it might sound cheesy, but I actually laugh sometimes at the stupid conversations we're having.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously I hope that everyone continues to branch out and invite their friends to become our friends here on the Film Frenzy podcast. But I want to just thank everybody. It's crazy because I looked at engagement and it was up like 160% the other day. And that blew my mind because I wasn't expecting it.
Yep. I think if, like I said, we just get a couple more people each week listening in, that's going to make us that much. And it's not like we're getting paid to do this. It's more fun. It's more exciting just to see how far we can get this to go.
Yes.
I really hope that we can someday get like a celebrity or something to at least like it or comment or something like that somewhere, that
Yeah.
somebody big somewhere listened in. That would be
Yeah.
awesome for us.
Yeah, that would be so fun. That would be so fun. But it's time to plug the socials. If you are not following us on Facebook and Instagram, a lot of us are following us on Facebook, but not on Instagram. Instagram is at Film Frenzy Podcast, all one word. Share with your friends. Sometimes I post fun things on the story. So keep that in mind. Also, our page is facebook.com/filmfrenzypodcast, all one word as well. Those are the best places to reach out to us if you have suggestions, want to talk about your favorite movies, anything like that. We are always down for conversation. So, I guess that wraps it up for this week on Memento.
Sounds good to me.
All right, and we will see you next week.
All right, guys, see you next week.
This episode of Film Frenzy contains spoilers for Christopher Nolan's Memento from the year 2000. Consider this your spoiler warning.